Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome to another special edition podcast here at TFMR. As you know, here in 2016, I've been working with Dan Amadori, trying to draw some attention to a few specific mining shares, mining companies that I think merit your attention. Let's put it that way. The latest example of this we're going to have today with president of a company called K92 Mining. His name is Brian Slezarczyk. So Brian, thank you very much for spending some time with us today.
Craig, thanks a lot for inviting me to do so.
This might be a new story for some folks. And so I think as we get started, I mean, just why don't you take a couple minutes and tell everybody about your background and how K92 came into being and the value that it represents.
Sure, absolutely. And as I jump into my background, I'll also let you know a little bit about the team that we put together, purpose formed for this high-grade gold asset. In fact, asset that was formerly owned by Barrick Gold,
yep,
the world's largest gold mining company. My background is in finance, and I fit into the structure of the team as president and as a director, and come from a background of being involved in the capital markets, corporate structuring of mining ventures. The team that we put together for this includes a real who's who of the mining industry, guys that have a particular successful track record at putting mines into production all over the world. We've got a fellow by the name of Ian Stocker, who's the chief executive officer. Ian's been a miner for the past 40 years. He was the vice president of Gold Fields when it was the fourth largest gold producer in the world. But Ian's probably best known for his role as the CEO of Uramin. He was the CEO of Uramin and sold that company for $2.5 billion in 2007. A fellow named Tookie Angus is the chair. Tookie was one of the founding directors of Bema Gold, of Ventana. Most people know a little bit about the Ventana story, which sold for $1.3 billion in the last environment for gold. And what all of these guys have in common is that they've had a career based on picking up assets when nobody wants assets and disposing these assets when things are frothy. And we were able to pick up this asset at the bare bottom of this gold bear market that we've experienced for 5 years.
The asset itself is where, and what else can you tell us about it?
Sure. It's in Papua New Guinea, which is just a great place to be working as a mining company. 80% of the GDP of Papua New Guinea is based on oil and gas, mining, natural resources. It's a high-grade asset. There's currently 1.84 million ounces of inferred at 11.6 grams per ton gold equivalent. There's an additional 240,000 ounces at 13.3 grams gold equivalent. And there's an existing mill, mine, infrastructure in place, built largely by Barrick Gold.
And then Barrick sold it to you at almost rock bottom prices, it seems like, not too long ago.
Well, absolutely. And what you'll often see at the bottom of these markets is the majors, who often operate like big bureaucracies, exit the projects that are non-core. And Barrick, with $13 billion in debt at the time of this disposition, announced that they would dispose of all non-core assets around the world to reduce their debt level. And we were able to sweep in and purchase this asset when gold was at its rock bottom in terms of market sentiment. Now, we're really fortuitous. Because of the management team in place, we were able to finance this privately for more than a year, advance the project, back towards production, and now we're on the cusp of targeted production for August. So just weeks away, we'll have our first gold production from this high-grade gold asset.
Wow, wow. And that, to me, is what makes this so interesting, because I've been asking every mining expert, every mining share expert, fund manager that I could speak with over the last 12 months, once these things turn, how do you pick survivors, you know, winners versus losers? And universally, I mean, without exception, they say you got to have an excellent team. You got to have people that have done it before, that know what they're doing, both in management and, you know, the actual, you know, rock breakers out there, the geologists. Then you've also got to have high quality assets in the right place. Sounds like you've got them both. And then, like you said, now, Brian, we are just now, what, 60 days away from actually getting your first ounces out of the ground? Is that right?
Well, that's right. And I think that it's also really interesting to point out that just days after we acquired this asset, Craig, a guy by the name of Alex Davidson joined our team. Why is that important? Because Alex Davidson was the executive VP in charge of exploration and corporate development worldwide for Barrick when Barrick purchased this asset and when Barrick substantially invested in it. And Barrick purchased this asset for $141 million U.S., subsequently invested more than $100 million advancing the project. And because of that, we have a situation where there is an existing processing facility, existing first-class underground mine development, a 350-person camp, a dedicated hydroelectric power line to the project, paved road, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, when we took the project over, we found there was more than $12 million in spares and parts just in the stores. There were 26 light vehicles, underground mining equipment, a brand new office that, to tell you the truth, still had the air conditioners in the plastic wrap. So we very much walked into a turnkey operation. Over the past year, we cleaned up the underground, got it ready to restart, made some enhancements to the mill during the refurbishment process. And because we were able to do all of this via funding the project privately, investors now entering as a brand new public company have the benefit of near-term high-grade production via existing infrastructure, and they eliminate a lot of the risks that are normally associated with a restart, including big CapEx risks, the risks of developing underground, the risks of not getting construction done on time. All of that's been eliminated because this project had Barrick Gold there investing substantially and advancing it until we took it over.
That's just incredible. And so, it's an amazing story. And I sit here and think, what in the world was Barrick thinking? And obviously, this guy that left Barrick, he probably did so because he thought this is too good of a deal that they've left on the table and walked away from. I want to join the buyers. I mean, would that be a good way to look at it? And why would Barrick give up on it so fast?
Well, Barrick made a statement to all of their shareholders around this time that we were able to acquire it. And what Barrick's top executives said is, look, we're $13 billion in debt. We have projects all over the world. We're going to get back to our core projects in North America. We're going to completely exit Southeast Asia, Australia, Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, et cetera, et cetera. And they promised shareholders that they would be shedding assets to reduce debt. And because of the fact we had guys like Tookie Angus, who incidentally is also the chairman of Nevsun, like Ian Stocker, who's one of the most well-known mine builders in the world, guys like Doug Kerwin. Doug was credited with leading the discovery team at OU Tolgoi. Alex Davidson, who I mentioned, ex-Barrick. Because we had this team around us, we were able to acquire it from Barrick and quickly advance it when nobody else out there wanted to be looking at gold assets. Now, all of a sudden, there's a bit more shine in the gold market, and we would never be able to do this deal today.
Yeah. I tell you, I like it. I like it a lot. I think it's, boy, it's about as compelling of a story as you're going to find. I want everybody to check it out, and we'll get the actual symbol of the company in Canada. It trades on the TSX under the symbol K, N as in Nancy, Tom. You can also find shares in the U.S. under the symbol KNT, N as in Nancy, Frank. So K, Nancy, Tom, Nancy, Frank. But that's not the whole story. What I think is particularly interesting too, Brian, as we kind of wrap this up is, I mean, I see you as one of us. There are so many folks on my site, but really all around the world, that recognize now that the metals are grossly manipulated by these bullion banks and how they trade in the paper markets. But yet so few, I mean, hardly any mining executives and big shots seem to get it. It's like they're just a bunch of geologists, and every time the banks bend them over, they're just like, oh, whatever, you know, what can we do? We're just going to go out there and get more metal out of the ground. But Brian, you get it. And I mean, if anything, it's worth supporting your company because you seem like you're one of us.
Well, I'll tell you, I appreciate that. And I'll tell you, I'm a big believer in the long-term prospects for the gold market. And manipulation, as you phrased it, is one way to describe what's going on. But I think we can even take it a step further and call it for what it is, which is the collusion of the central bankers,
yep,
propping each other's worthless fiat currencies up with more worthless fiat currencies. A great example, and I'm ashamed to say it, is right here in Canada. Canada just announced that they got rid of their last bit of gold, gold that was to be a store of wealth, to give the currency some true value. And what was the statement that they made? They said, don't worry, we don't need gold because we've got $48 billion U.S. dollars that help support our currency. So it's this collusion of central bankers propping each other's worthless fiat currencies up with their own worthless fiat currencies of a different color. And it's ridiculous. And some people out there get it, and some don't. Pierre Lassonde is a guy that gets it. Here's a guy, a legendary gold investor. And what he often points to, of course, is this correlation between gold and the Dow. He talks about the fact that in 1980, gold was at $800, and the Dow was at $800. In 1934, gold was at $36, and the Dow was at $37. Well, here we've got the Dow today, and I don't have to tell you where that's at, but are we going to get $16,000, $17,000 gold? Maybe. But even if we get halfway there, projects like K92 that were picked up at the bottom when nobody wanted gold assets are going to benefit. And with production just weeks away, we think it's a very unique situation. It's not an exploration play. It's not a concept. It's not a big geological expedition by a bunch of academic geologists. This is a project with existing infrastructure, a very high-grade resource, and production just weeks away. And if you're right, and I'm right, and gold does go higher over the midterm, the long term, well, that's just icing on the cake for us, because we've designed this project to work at very low gold costs. If we get a bit of an uptick in the metal, well, that's just icing on the cake, as I say, and shareholders will be all the better for it.
Yeah, I tell you what, putting it all together between the management, the geological expertise, the ounces in the ground that are ready to come out, the fact that you understand what we're up against and how the global economy is a big Ponzi scheme. And I got to tell you, at the end of the day, I've always had to burn my saddle for Barrick, just with the way they've always been the bullion bank's friend. Anytime we can stick it to them, I feel pretty good too. So,
you know, as a former broker at one of Canada's largest independent investment firms, and as a guy that built his whole business financing mining companies, you know, I looked at Barrick over the years, and they've got a lot of great guys there, but they also have very complicated hedge books. You never know buying some of these majors if you'll benefit from a rising gold price like you can benefit from the unhedged smaller companies that believe in the long-term prospects for bullion. And I think that I go to sleep every night right now thanking Barrick for disposing of this asset at exactly what looks to be the wrong time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I tell you what, I'm sure everybody listening is going, yeah, that sounds like something I want to take a look at. How can anyone find out more information on K92 and your company, the background, everything else? Where do they go?
Sure. We have a website that's www.k92mining.com. There's also, if you search Ian Stalker, I-A-N, Stalker, and look for a video that he recently did, which was an interview about the restart of the mine and just how excited we are about it from a technical perspective. That's a great piece. But you'll also find a lot of photos on the website that show the progress on site towards restart, including project pictures showing the progress at the mine and the mill. We just put a news release, in fact, Craig, that indicated we're ahead of schedule, we're on budget, and what's really exciting is the performance of the mill in our testing and load commissioning phase has actually quite dramatically outperformed what we originally budgeted. So it's been a series of pleasant surprises in the restart process, and I think that with restart just weeks away, there will be a lot of catalysts here in the very near term.
You mentioned, too, the cost of production being pretty low. Let's end with that.
I mean, we're targeting to be in the lowest quartile of production in the industry. We want to be in a position where at $600, $700 gold, we're still making money. Now, do I think gold's going to be at $600 or $700 any time soon? No. But again, that's a bonus for us. We designed this project to work, even in the tough, tough times. But all I see in the short, the mid, and the long term here are much rosier times ahead for gold. And we can provide, because of our low-cost base of production, we can provide shareholders with some really nice exposure to that rising gold market.
Well, I tell you what, again, I want to encourage everybody to do your own research, your own due diligence. Check the company out. The shares traded in on the TSX at KNT here in the U.S., KNTNF. Might be something you want to think about. Brian, thanks so much for your time. This has been a fascinating discussion and something I'm definitely going to want to learn more about, too.
Great. Thanks so much, Craig.
All right. Hey, thanks, everybody, for listening.